And coming up next on Free Radio in Santa Cruz, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned for guest Tim Rumford and special interviews with Shane Maxfield and other locals on local civil rights issues, plus some updates on attacks on medical marijuana clinics around the state. Welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. That was Incamaru, Para el Mundo, La Nueva Expresión del Folclore Andino, which is a Peruvian group. In my excursion abroad about a year ago, or actually 9 months ago or so, I picked that up. Maybe it was 6 months ago. Anyway, you're tuned to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I am Bathrop Spear. These are my broadsides, and it's easy to get in touch with this show. You're listening to it now, hopefully. And if you want to call in, you can. I turn down your radio if you do, and call 427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can also catch us streaming on freakradio.org. You can leave a message for the studio, for the collective, at 427-4523, 427-4523, where you can actually get an application if you want to apply for the station, or if you want to leave us a message, you can do that, too, regarding any number of things, donations you may have, concerns you may have, information you may have, public service announcements that you may have. Speaking of which, Augusto Sandino contacted me just a few moments ago and reminded me that, and hopefully I'm going to try to play his own presumably well-put-together promo, but there's speech tonight, Oaxaca in Crisis, or En Crisis, perhaps, if you speak Spanish. José Alejandro Sandoval Torres and Juan Manuel López Zarzosa, representantes de APO, Asamblea Popular del Pueblo de Oaxaca, that is, the representatives of APO, the Popular Assembly of the City of Oaxaca. And you've heard a bit about Oaxaca in the last half hour. They're meeting today, that's Jueves, or Thursday for you hunkies, on the 12 de octubre, that's October 12th today, Indigenous Slaughter Day. Actually, it's not. I guess October 9th was Indigenous Slaughter Day, sometimes known by Colorado residents as Columbus Day, since they created it way back in 1907, I'm told, according to certain Native American speakers on Amy Goodman. Anyway, Oaxaca in Crisis, starring Torres and Zarzosa, you get some updates on Oaxaca in Crisis at the Brown Berets get-together at 406 B Main Street, all the way down the road in Watsonville. Hopefully they're going to be recording it for those of us who are either occupied or too lazy, too poor, too distracted to get to Watsonville. And that's 406 B Main Street. Detrás de Ritmo Latino, which I guess is that beside the Ritmo Latino. I wish I knew what quite that meant, not sure. And that's at 8 o'clock tonight. Again, Oaxaca in Crisis, 8 o'clock tonight, Watsonville, 406 B Main Street, Brown Berets. Information, 750-8687. 750-8687. Discúlpeme. So, 750. 8687, el número para llamar, if you have a number to call, if you have questions about it. Anyway, welcome to Bathrobes Piers Broadsides. My studio guest has not appeared yet, but hopefully he will, although sometimes he has health problems. And he's a man who does a lot of work, both for Huff, the old Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom gang, of which I'm a member, and for people in the community generally. He does a Monday night meal, which you may have seen, every 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock down in front of New Leaf Market on Pacific in downtown Santa Cruz. He feeds folks and talks to folks and kind of has his ear to the pavement, so to speak, to hear what's going on. He's a very useful source of information for me. So hopefully he will be here soon. I'm queuing up a tape or two while I am. We're going to hear a little more music from way south of the border, so don't go away. Here we go. First, we join Musical Mike in the courthouse, where he often sits strumming his guitar on Wednesdays.
Halloween is here. Halloween is here. Down by the red barn in between the corn stalks sits a little pumpkin just as fat and he can't talk. A little mouse comes creeping in beside the scene. Whisper, whisper, whisper. Halloween is here.
And we're at the courthouse on October 11th, 2006, Wednesday after the small but mighty or mighty small Huff meeting, listening to the music of Michael. And Michael, musical Mike here is strumming and got a keyboard in front of him. He often shows up here in the atrium between the courthouse and the county building near the coffee cart. For those of you who like his music or his good spirits, you can check him out while you learn as you listen at the Huff meeting, or perhaps contribute in terms of the kind of work we're doing, which is civil rights for poor people. However, commercial aside, I was going to ask Michael something. He had a quick report for us on what's happening at the Metro as soon as he finishes this Halloween song, which he may have already finished. Okay. So what's the deal with the Metro, Mike?
The Metro, well, you know, the kids hang there. It's kind of a punkster gathering, and no, they just find ways to move them along, and they can't sit on the bricks. You know, the cops used to keep us off the curb, and now the Metro guards is kicking us off the bricks.
Now, the bricks is a little wall that's right in front of the Metro station on Pacific Avenue?
Yeah, it's sort of a curb for the Metro garden there, and, you know, it's quite entertaining. They got a job to do, and power to the Metro Security. We love them.
Is it Metro Security or is it police that are doing this, or both?
It's they're calling it Metro property, and so, yeah, it's the Metro people. I think it might be the first alarmers. I'm not sure. Some sort of rent-a-cop, you know.
You heard about it, but you haven't seen it.
Oh, I've experienced it. I mean, I play there once a week, usually on a Monday night, and, yeah, you know, they're just making their rounds, and that's one of their checkpoints. You know, they probably got a little star they put by their, you know, checkpoint time when they get somebody on the bricks. There's a song in there somewhere.
Yes, indeed. So tell me, what gosh, the thought has fled, but when were you last approached by a police officer or a security? It was a security guard that approached you? Or?
Yeah, one of the boys in blue. You know, they just do their thing. Can't be right or wrong. Just something to do. We're all playing a role in some form, being out there enjoying the day.
So when your response, you were playing the guitar sitting on the bricks?
Yeah, I was just sitting there casually chilling with the villains, they might say. And he just came around and he just gave us official notice. You know, he didn't really even stick around to see if we moved. So he just basically wanted to spoil our mood, maybe, or just do his job, or whatever you want to call it.
And what did he say to you?
He said, this is Metro property. You can't sit on the bricks.
We're talking about public property, part of the Metro Transit District. I suppose he's telling you suddenly you can't sit on a park bench. I mean, on the bench, on the bus stop depot bench. Did he ask you if you were waiting for a bus or engaging in lawful business there?
Well, this isn't a place where people catch a bus, so maybe I should make that clear. It is a loitering spot, but we got to loiter somewhere. You know, loitering is our official right.
By loitering, you mean assembling, right? In other words, it's a right guaranteed by the First Amendment of the Constitution.
Well, I knew you were going somewhere with this, and maybe I don't get it yet, but yeah, you know how we are. We just visit and meet people.
Were you planning to overthrow the government? Were you planning to vandalize the stores? I mean, were you acting in a way that was unusual from the way you acted the week before?
You know, I think it's pretty much same old. You know, they got us away from the other side because they put a change machine in, so now we're down to just the Metro side of that part of town, and, you know, it's just they're shrinking the safe space.
Of course, the change machine means you can't sit within 50 feet on any public property.
Yeah, 50 feet of a machine is loitering, I hear.
Well, it's not loitering. There's no loitering law, but it's criminal to do so under the municipal code.
October 11th, 2006. I'm here at the Drum Circle at the Farmer's Market. It's about 6 o'clock, and I'm talking with a man holding a bunny. Your name, sir?
Shane.
And Shane, what's new from the street?
I don't know. I haven't been on the street for about a week.
Well, this is good news.
Yeah, I know. I've been letting my eye heal.
And it looks like the Drum Circle's gotten as diminished. Have you been here for a while at this particular?
About an hour, yeah.
Any hassles from police?
No. I've been hassled once by police here. You know how everybody passes the joint around, you know? Well, I can't figure this out to this day, but for some reason, the cop that was standing over by by that van over there, it was a few weeks back, he singled me out and decided to threaten to pull me in for, you know, taking a hit off a joint.
This was the Lulu Carpenter's affair?
No, this was here at the Drum Circle weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
Because you asked if I've ever been harassed by cops here. Once.
And what kind of a ticket did you get?
I didn't get one, but he threatened to give me a ticket.
For?
Smoking pot.
Do you have your medical marijuana card?
Yeah, I have two of them.
You showed it to him?
Yeah, I showed it to him.
Did he back off?
Yeah, he backed off, but he said it didn't matter. He could still ticket me if he wanted to.
Name of the cop?
You know what? I don't remember his name.
Thank you. That's inappropriate behavior for a police officer.
He was young, though. He was a younger cop.
Young and stupid or young and vicious, one of the two. I'm not sure which.
And that was Shane Maxfield, whom I interviewed yesterday at the Farmer's Market. We have a longer interview with him, which talks about an issue that's been raised on the show, actually a previous show, and will probably be discussed on IndieBay.org. For those of you who don't know, it's a local website that I post on and others post on. IndieBay.org has lots of interesting information. I'm actually going to go there right now and see if our studio guest, who seems to be arriving, unless I'm having a hallucination. That's greetings, Tim.
Hello.
Have you done any posting on IndieBay recently?
No, since I talked to you this morning, I haven't been in front of a computer, unfortunately.
Oh, well, let's just see what we got here. Anyway, I paused from the item I was playing, which was Shane Maxfield's description of an incident that happened, a couple weeks ago now, in front of Lulu Carpenter's, or near Lulu Carpenter's, involving, I guess I would say, abuse by a merchant against a homeless disabled person. Shane is a person with AIDS, and we've talked about Shane and Donna, his caretaker and partner, being evicted from apartments they lived in for years and years in a rather arbitrary and some would say arbitrary and capricious, as others would say, as part of a plan to get rid of them because they'd previously, at least Donna had been an activist around issues of tenants' rights. She was the head of the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz. They're both now living in their vehicle. And it's kind of a struggle. I think at one point I may have read Donna Dice's update on life in a vehicle, and she's written me something further. I don't think I've yet received permission from her to read that, but I may soon, her latest update. But this incident that occurred, which you brought to my attention, Tim, I guess at a Huff meeting or at some other point, alerted me to, again, a continuing problem we have downtown, which is not just the abuse that merchants visit upon homeless people, street people, and I no doubt there's a reciprocal problem, too, but that is, of course, in the teeth of a lot of police and courts and private security guards, and I think the merchants can pretty well take care of their own, if they're genuine problems of violence or abuse, you know, there are ways to deal with it. The problem we have, of course, here is when people who are vulnerable and innocent are harassed by people in positions of privilege and power, like merchants who have the police, it's hard to say at their beck and call, and I'm sure the merchants would disagree with that. They'd say that, you know, they'll probably be as critical of the police as we are from another perspective. But indeed, when the police came, there was, as we've described before, Shane got a ticket for panhandling with abusive language because in response to a series of threats and vituperative language from Manafree Srinath, he said, "You fucker," I believe, at some point. And that was used as a basis for claiming that he was panhandling with abusive language. In fact, of course, as you put it, Tim, you had a sign, which you didn't see, you didn't witness any of this, but you took all this down. You came to the conclusion after talking with Shane and an employee of the the Lulu Carpenters.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before. I'm trying to sum it up.
I did speak to an employee of Lulu Carpenters, and the sign basically read, ill, lost house to fire, have computer skills, wish to work. It doesn't directly ask for money. And if it hasn't been mentioned yet, the one other important fact is Shane was the only one that called the police, and the police told me that. Although Manarith claims that he called the police as well.
Manarith is, of course, the owner of Lulu Carpenters, as well as a mysterious Capitola coffee shop we're trying to learn the name of.
Got it here.
Aha. We have
give
the name
me a second.
We're going to pull back the veil on old Manarith here.
Coffee Cat in Scotts Valley on Mount Hermon Road. He also plans on opening 4 new coffee shops somewhere in the area.
Oh ho! Interesting. So he's expanding his net, so to speak, or his network.
According to his own words here, I'm not a study hall. I'm not a poetry reading coffee shop. There are 50,000 people in this town, and I cater to about 1,000 of them. People who care about us, and those are the people that I care about.
You're referring to, I guess, looking at an article in the Metro from a year or two ago, or?
This was, let's see, 10/12/2006.
So this was 10/12/2006? Can't be 10/12/2006.
This is when the article was posted about them making friends.
Looks like March 5th, 2004. It's at the bottom, I think.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And
I'm sorry.
So
this is the date I printed it.
And actually, lest I be thought I'm engaging in a hate Manafree Srinath session, which I'm not. I invited him to come on the air. I wasn't able to talk to him directly, but I did speak to one of his employees. I made it clear that we had, I think, a week ago. Was it a week ago you were on the air on this?
Yeah, last week. Exactly.
And you can review that. Anybody out there wants to get more details on this than you're getting right now, and you'll probably get more than you need, I'm sure, because I usually reiterate all this stuff endlessly. And we're going to hear Shane's story, and he'll be talking about his own perspective on things by tape, and perhaps, who knows, maybe by phone if he calls in.
He's going to try. I just spoke to him.
Uh-huh. Okay. You can go to the website, Huff Santa Cruz, H-U-F-F Santa Cruz, all one word, all small letters, .org, and then you can click on the show time. You go to the show, Bathroom Spears Broadsides, and you'll be able to actually download and hear the show and go through some of the details there. And hopefully somebody will post an article on this on indiebay.org, inviting people to tell their own stories. And that's really what I'm interested in knowing, is what have your experiences been, not just with Manafree Srinath, but with other merchants downtown, and specifically the connection with the police. The problem here is not just that Manafree blew his stack at a disabled homeless person and tried to threaten, intimidate, and drive him away, and actually did. He was successful in doing that. But that the police department colluded with this, even though Shane was doing nothing illegal. In fact, the police, according to Shane's account and what Tim has gleaned, as you understand it, Tim, he was in illegal. He was very careful to find one of those rare, perhaps not as rare as it could be, but it's 75% of the sidewalks out of bounds for sitting at, even with a political sign or with a panhandling sign. Actually, if you're panhandling, 95% of the sidewalk is out of bounds. You can't be within 10 feet of a building if you are, if you have any kind of a so-called display device, which I guess they would say Shane did, and then if you are actually panhandling, looking for something of value, as they put it, by sign, silently, or by word in a spoken way, you have to be 14 feet. And actually, the actual wording of the law is even worse. It's never been enforced this way, but if some eager cop wanted to enforce it, the people that you are panhandling have to be more than 14 feet away from the building as well, which, of course, is impossible. They'd have to be walking in the gutter or, you know, in the last, very, very near the edge of the street. That's the actual wording of the panhandling ordinance. Designed by brilliant minds like Mike Rotkin and Cynthia Matthews, who are running for re-election. If you want more of the same, they're the people to vote for. If not, I have a button for you, which I would encourage you to wear, that says the terrible two, not again. Then it has some toxic skull and crossbones through Matthews and Rotkin. And I see you've reprinted that button. And a
few of these have been showing up around town in odd places.
Nice format, yeah. I think you see a Rotkin sticker. Go and ask the permission of whoever is foolish enough to give Rotkin the permission to put up his Rotkin for Fuhrer, Rotkin for Council poster and ask if you can put up a no thanks kind of thing in response. So I'm interested in hearing from you as to what, all of you out there, as to what kind of experiences you have had. 427-3772 around merchants and the police, because the issue here was the police were, in essence, not just kind of act showing partiality towards a merchant, but making up law. And the irony here is that the law that they were doing this kind of fix-it job on in order to drive away Shane, which is the panhandling with profane or abusive language. I guess it's now called panhandling with abusive language because the profane section was struck down in an agreement with the federal courts when it was unconstitutional, was found unconstitutional as applied to John Maurer, who had a little, he similarly been harassed by the police. Again, more than likely on behalf of merchants, but I think maybe Pam Bechtel, who harassed him, had her own agenda when she was going after John Maurer 3 years ago. He had a little fuck the pig sign in his hat, and the cops started ticketing him for that. That, of course, is a direct violation of free speech, which the ACLU, which couldn't be bothered with homeless concerns and basic survival issues, may have taken a more of an interest. Actually, it wasn't the ACLU. It was Paul Sanford. And the ACLU, by the way, in other cities than this, is a very good organization, in some cities anyway, regarding homeless civil rights in Los Angeles. Their lawsuit and their pressure has forced the L.A. police to lay off the Skid Row homeless somewhat. I mean, obviously, they're still stalking around and arresting people during the day, but there was a city attorney determination that because a federal court had ruled that they couldn't do it, even though they were appealing it, and they could still theoretically do it while the case was on appeal. They didn't want to do that. I guess they didn't want to risk any further a lawsuit. Instead, they decided they would simply go after homeless people during the day. Now, in Santa Cruz, we have the opposite situation, where Judge Tom Kangaroo Kelly ruled in 1997 in the Hopkins case that it's only legal to sleep during the day, but because it is, it's okay for the police to go after the homeless at night because, as he puts it, they can always sleep in the day, can't they? You know, what's the problem? Tom Kelly, we should insist that he sleep in the day and then try to do his judicial activity. I like him as an individual. He's a nice guy. But as a judge, he really, doesn't need to say he leaves a lot to be desired. He's so far up the ass of the merchants that I don't think he ever came out again. I mean, it's very sad, and that's, you know, I mean, it's not just, you know, an opportunity to make sort of smutty jokes about Kelly. The reality is, people have been suffering and dying for the last 10 years because of that ruling, and because of the activities of the police. People can't sleep together in safe areas. This was pointed out by the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women in 1998, particularly regarding women. What did then supervisor Marty Wormhout do about that issue? This issue. I think she's still supervisor. I guess she'll be supervisor until Coonerty comes in November. Doesn't he get? I'm not sure what the story is. I know he beat his opponent in the primary. I don't know if he's actually taken office. I guess he has taken office.
I think he has.
Yeah, I think he has. But anyway, we have this collusion between merchants and the police that at least came up in this case, the Shane Maxfield case, and the Manafree Srinath, owner of Lulu Carpenter's case. And I'd like to know if anybody out there has any. We can have thoughts on the subject, but in particular experiences that you'd like to discuss. And if you don't want to discuss them publicly, you might go to the indiebay.org website when this thing actually gets posted up there.
I'm almost finished with my abridged version.
you're almost ready to post?
Yeah.
Then you can add your own thoughts, because I think.
In the meantime, if they want to go to humanityforhomeless.blogspot.com, Shane's expanded story is there.
Give me that again.
It's humanityforhomeless.blogspot.com.
Humanityforhomeless.blogspot.com. I've got it.
No www.
For Shane's expanded story. Okay, humanityforhomeless.blogspot.com.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. You can check that out and hope you will.
There's been a few comments left. One by a local person. Some people are concerned about what happened. I'm particularly concerned that he called and was asking for protection and did not receive it. You know, when a person calls the police, that means they're in trouble, generally. And
911. It's actually a crime to make an illegal call, or a call that's frivolous or of that nature. The what he was ultimately given a ticket for was 9.10.040D. By using abusive language either during the solicitation or following a refusal. And, of course, that's not the updated language, which is even more pertinent, which I don't have. It's because the language was changed after the Maurer lawsuit won $25,000 for the attorneys and $5,000 for Maurer about three or four months ago. It's the first and only time the downtown ordinance has actually been challenged in court in that way. And I hope that there'll be some more challenges. And indeed, I understand attorney Paul Sanford is preparing to take Shane Maxfield's case in the unlikely event that the city attorney John Barisoni or one of his minions shows up in court to actually prosecute this stuff, because it's obviously not a case of give me some money, you fucker, or you didn't give me any money, you fucker. It's more like get the fuck away from me, you fucker. And the idea is that if somebody's coming on and harassing you or attacking you, do you have the right to defend yourself? Do you have the right to respond? Well, according to the police department, apparently, you don't if you're a panhandler or a poor person. And Shane also apparently had a sign that I guess could arguably be said he wasn't panhandling, although in effect, I suppose he was, because he was looking for money.
Yeah, I mean,
he was looking for work as well.
Yeah, he was looking. He legitimately wants work, but he takes a very mild, approach to it, where people can get an idea of his situation by reading his sign, and they come talk to him, and if they want to help him, they do. It's about the most, mild way I could think of doing it.
So, again, the phone number here is 427-3772. I want to hear more of your comments, Tim, but do you want to do your comments first, or do you want me to hear some of Shane's?
Why don't you go ahead and do Shane's, finish Shane's.
This is Shane's perspective on this.
I haven't heard it yet, so I'd like to...
Sure, and you've spoken to him, of course.
Yeah, he was
anyway, but
really tired when I interviewed him. And
he was tired when this happened, too. So he's a man who's, taking all kinds of concoctions to deal with AIDS, and that's, as I understand it, not... the most upbeat situation.
He's having a hard time.
Yeah. So here it is.
The thing on the mall with cops seems to be that they like to come up to people and go, I heard about a week ago you were seen doing such and such. Is that true? And that's how they break the ice. And that's how they start talking to you, And I think that it's really a shame when the cops have to resort to petty games, kids games, to try to turn people against each other and cause trouble down on the mall or whatever, as far as anything else, I don't know.
Standard police practice, I'm afraid. Thank you, Shane. You may be showing up on the radio show. If you do, welcome.
Right on. Thank you. Appreciate that.
All right. Shane, I've been getting this story, and I have heard it from Tenderfoot Tim, as I call Tim Rumford, about your being given the business by both Manafree Srinath of Lulu Carpenters, the owner of that questionable establishment, and a police officer. His name starts with C, but I've forgotten what the actual name of the cop is.
And the name of that police officer is?
Jeffrey Caldridge, I believe badge number 142.
Hey, keep your eyes open for Jeffrey and see what other kinds of tickets he's writing these days.
Sat on the sidewalk with a sign and a bunny.
Right, yeah, my little rabbit. I still have my rabbits right here.
Name of the...
He's always there.
Your bunny stays with you.
Yeah, most of the time, yeah.
Name of the bunny?
Fluffy.
Fluffy, indeed. How appropriate. Now, to give us again a blow-by-blow of this lamentable incident, although I think I've heard about it many times, but I don't know if I've ever heard about it directly from you.
The way Tim told it to you was very accurate. In fact, when he told about me calling Donna for a rescue, even before everything hit the fan, that's all recorded in my cell phone. Before I called 911, I called Donna to come get me out of there.
Well,
so
describe for us what happened again.
Well, I was sitting off to the left of his building. I wasn't even on his property. I wasn't even in front of his restaurant, technically. And I was in a totally legal panhandling zone. Even the cops told me that, they had no right to make me move. I could stay there until dawn or dusk or whatever they call it, And
what time of day was it?
It was like 4:30 or 3:30 or 4. It was late. And I was just trying to get, you know, it was late in the afternoon. We needed some propane. So I thought, well, okay, I'll just go out there for the last couple hours of the day and try to make some money.
You needed propane for heating in your house?
Well, since we lost our apartment for that fire thing, we've been living in this RV and it runs everything on it. Even the fridge on it runs propane.
You're a person with AIDS who's been evicted with your partner and caretaker after living for many years in this apartment building, right?
Right, right.
This was after an incident on Pacific Avenue where you were roughed up by an officer.
Well, see, the officer was absolutely positive that I was under the influence of alcohol when I had just started my HIV cocktail. And I found out, I asked the doctors about this, and it turns out that police are legally supposed to call the doctor and ask if you're on.
Suggesting our police department didn't do what it was supposed to do.
They didn't do it. He told me he didn't care about my terminal illnesses. So, you know.
This was an earlier incident. Beginning to the one at Lulu Carpenter's, you were there with your bunny, and what happened?
Well, I was sitting there, and I was playing with my rabbit. My sign was basically advertising that I have computer skills, and I'm willing to, you know, fix somebody's computer for a few bucks. And I wasn't asking anybody for nothing. I wasn't talking to nobody or nothing. And the guy just comes up to me out of the blue, literally, and comes right up into my space.
How was he dressed?
He was dressed in I think whitish pants and a blue and white striped T-shirt.
What a memory.
Like Indian kind of dressing, colors, you know, choices.
What was the first thing you remember him saying?
The first thing I remember is him swearing at me, saying, "Get the fuck out of here."
To which you said, or didn't say?
I looked up at him, and I said, I looked at him, and I looked for any kind of a badge or anything like that, or a uniform or anything. And I didn't see nothing like that on him, so I said very politely, I don't see a badge on you. Who are you, you know? And then he starts, like, starts chucking and hissing and sighing and pacing frantically back and forth, you know? Then he starts making threats, you know? Well, okay, it's time to make your life hell and all this and that, you know?
And you remember in terms of the words he said?
Yeah, well, he said he was going to make my life hell. He said he could make my life miserable. He made a bunch of statements that basically were to threaten the quality of my life, you know, in this town for the rest of my life, as I know it or whatever. And
did you respond to this?
Eventually, I did. I did actually eventually get pissed off enough to say, you're a sucker. You know, but that, you know, and everybody.
Did you jump up and begin hitting him with an iron bar? Or?
I didn't even get up once. I was sat down the whole time.
Did you attack him with a knife from below?
No, I never even got off on my feet.
You shoot him three times in the belly?
No, never.
Apparently not. Did you advance on a threatening manner using your bunny as your weapon?
No.
So I simply said, you said, you're a fucker.
Yeah, I said he was being a fucker because he was. He was an asshole.
What was his response to that?
Oh, then he looks at all his employees in his restaurant and says, okay, you all heard it. Now I've got you all as witnesses.
And how many were there?
Then he started going over there telling them all what to say when the cops came.
Yeah. Were there other employees nearby?
There were a few girls that were out there that were his employees, from what I understand.
Watching or doing other things?
They were acting like they were just doing their own thing, but I know they were watching pretty much. It was kind of obvious that they were watching. And I know this one was watching because she later told him, you know, that she saw the whole thing and was very disgusted with the whole incident. And that she, you know, that she has worked there with this guy for 3 years and hates his guts or something like that. Well, she'll attest to the fact that he's an asshole, you know. That's all you got to do is go on the internet and put his name on it. It's Google his name and he comes up on the internet having done all this weird shit, you know.
So you said, you're a fucker. He walked over and said something to the effect of, you all heard that, and then what happened?
He walked over back to his own restaurant.
Right.
And said, oh, you all heard that.
You were sitting further down toward the clock or further up toward the bookshop?
Toward the bookshop area, yeah. Yeah, then he came back. Then he came back after he walked towards his restaurant and started harassing me some more and stuff. And, like, just making more threats, you know. He kept saying, we this, we that. I couldn't figure that out. He kept saying, we don't want your, you know, we don't want this, and we don't want that, and we don't want your kind around, and we're going to do this, and we're going to make your life hell, and we're going to do this to you, and blah, 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 blah. And it was all we.
Did anyone come over to support you, or Were there any people witnessing this?
You know what? It was a time of day where there was a lot of cars driving by, a lot of noise, a lot of distractions, and it was at the end of the mall where nobody goes. And I found out why nobody goes down there, too, because apparently he's chased them all away already. He's got everybody scared.
And were there people sitting in the outside part of the cafe?
Yeah.
In front of Lulu Carpenter?
His employees?
Just the employees.
Pretty sure, yeah. Well, there was one guy that had just left right before the whole thing went down. So the one guy that was probably there, you know, took off. But.
So what happened then?
Well, the cop came, you know, actually two cops came, a top and a bottom. I always call them tops and bottoms, but there's a short one with a tall one, you know. And it just looks funny that way, that's all. But anyways, they come along, and I told them, I says, look, you know, I asked permission to, you know, I made sure that I was legally zoned here to do this, you know.
Who did you determine this from?
The officer that gave me the ticket.
You already asked the officer before, previous in the day?
Right. Oh, yeah. I always will ask an officer if I'm legally...
Was it the same officer? Okay.
No, it wasn't the same officer that I asked.
It's a different officer.
Yeah. But still, even the officer that gave me the ticket agreed and told Manafree that he had no right to make me move, that I was in the proper position.
What was Manafree's response?
His response was just all he would do is sigh and chuck and pace. Sigh, chuck, and pace.
Seemed upset.
Yeah.
You let him pet the bunny?
He seemed like he wanted to say a lot more and do a lot more. Like he was having to work really hard to hold himself back. You know, like he knew that there were people watching him and he couldn't do something, stuff that he wanted to be doing. So, you know, you could tell. It was obvious. So,
what day was this?
I don't know. I don't remember. I don't have my ticket with me.
Maybe the day of the week?
No.
And we're going to pause briefly for this non-commercial announcement. And it's 85% slated for bonding. While you pay homage to a cowboy trying to be Nazi, uranium ensures depletion of future Iraqis. The Arab world wants Starbucks, they starstruck food for oil, blood for soil. Now America's spoiled. El pueblo unido jamás será vencido. 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 De pie cantar que vamos a triunfar. Avanzan ya. This Thursday, October 12th, representatives from the People's Popular Assembly of Oaxaca will be speaking in two places here in Santa Cruz County at 12 p.m. at the Bay Tree Conference Room D above the Bay Tree Bookstore on the UCSC campus. Jose Alejandro Sandoval Flores and Juan Manuel Lopez Zarzosa will be speaking about the People's Popular Movement in Oaxaca to get rid of the governor, a corrupt politician who attacked a teachers' union during a peaceful assembly, sparking a popular insurrection that has maintained control of the state of Oaxaca for several months now. They will also be speaking later that day at the Brown Beret office, 406B Main Street, behind the Ritmo Latino Music Store in Watsonville at 8 p.m. Again, representatives of APO, the Asamblea Popular del Pueblo de Oaxaca, will be speaking in two places this Thursday, October 12th, in Santa Cruz County. Bay Tree Bookstore, Conference Room D, 12 p.m. And the Brown Beret Office, 406 Main Street, at 8 p.m. Please come and inform yourself about this incredible, nonviolent, popular movement to change their and our world. Imponen la verdad de acero son ardiente batallón sus manos van llevando la justicia y la razón mujer con fuego y con valor ya estás aquí junto al trabajador y ahora el pueblo que se alza en la lucha con voz de gigante gritando adelante el pueblo jamás será vencido el pueblo. And again, that's tonight, 8 p.m., Brown Beret Office, 406 Main Street, behind Ritmo Latino in Watsonville. Two speakers, Jose Alejandro Sandoval Torres and Juan Manuel Lopez Sarsosa, representatives of APO, the Popular Assembly of the People of Oaxaca. Check it out. Now, getting back to the to this interview with Shane, any comments so far, Tim, that have come to mind? Or
Shane's stories, as he told it to me, I'm not sure. You know, I would like to see something happening about this. Shane would like to see something happen about this. I think there needs to be some sort of police oversight committee for, you know, homeless people, people that get that receive these type of tickets. They have no money. They have no way to get any, you know, legal help. I think that there needs to be something like that. And then I understand there used to be something like that. Maybe you could fill me in.
Rah-rah board, as I called it, or review board, as they call themselves.
Another one.
There actually is a thing called the Public Safety Committee, which, of course, is meaningless, a collection of three ne'er-do-well council members, Rotkin, Coonerty, and Porter, who are supposed to oversee the fire and police department. They are actually meeting, for those who like to observe such rituals, next Monday. Let me double-check on that. Let's see here. Still looking here. I thought I had this.
Ultimately, I think it's a sad day when a terminally ill guy calls the police and this happens to him. And I think that maybe this is a springboard for us to do something about it and other incidents like it, not just this incident. And maybe, you know, we need something like that, a committee or a review board. Made up of citizens, not council members, not merchants.
Right. Well, we need people who are alert to this and willing to mobilize a downtown when this happens. That's the most immediate thing. And the problem we had with the CPRB was that the Citizens Police Review Board is that they formed close ties with the police department because they were supposed to officially oversee complaints, but they never used their subpoena powers, and almost invariably they found the sustained complaints. And they didn't ask for independent investigations except once. When the most obvious one was when a Happy John Dine was shot dead by Officer Connor Carey in November of 1997, and they just, you know, even though and immediately there was a 12-hour cover-up where the police chief and the DA and I don't think the mayor at that time was actually liberal Celia Scott, one of the few opponents of the sleeping van, for instance, and she. She didn't like it, but the police chief said, "Oh well, this guy had a toy gun in his hand and was waving it threateningly at the officer, and the officer just, you know, had to act on this, and shot him twice." And of course, what everybody else said, other than all the non-police witnesses, including conservative people like folks who owned the now defunct candy store across from the farmer's market, very conservative groups of people and. Witness from it's now New Leaf Market, but it wasn't New Leaf Market, it was a store next to it. Palace Art Stationery is where this man now works, but John, a longtime worker there, you know, they all testified they saw nothing in Happy John Dine's hand. He wasn't making the threatening gestures, he wasn't standing in a military posture. Anyway, that was the most obvious case crying out for independent investigation. There was a Citizens Police Review Board all set up, ready to go, and they did nothing under the leadership of a dentist. What the hell was his name? A citizen. Wasn't a police officer, but, you know, they decided they would leave it to the police. Anyway, here's some more of Shane's account, and then we can talk some more about what we might do about it, and also I guess you have some other issues you want to raise, Tim.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about the disappearance of a lot of Medi-Cal and Medicare for low-income people.
Yeah, that's, I think, something we need to hear about. Also, it said in the City Council Action Agenda, which was emailed to me, that Councilmember Rotkin reported that the next Safety Committee meeting, Public Safety Committee, will be held on Monday, October 16th. The only trouble is it doesn't say when. How interesting. Probably 4 o'clock in the afternoon is my guess, but contact City Hall at 420-5020. Leave a message if you want to find out the answer to that question. I may announce it on Sunday if I find out the answer. Looks like our caller gave us two rings and then gave up. Try again, caller. We will, in fact, respond to you. So 427-3772 is the phone number, 427-3772.
A weekend.
I think it was a weekday, I think. I'm not sure. I'd have to look at the ticket.
So the officer
I had to go dig out the ticket.
Told Manafree and told you that you were legal, and then what happened?
He says, "I smell a ticket coming your way if you don't move."
What did his fellow officer say?
No, that's what he said.
What did his fellow officer say? Anything?
Oh, his fellow officer said... He just mumbled some shit about, well, I've been doing this for 10 years, blah, 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 blah.
You, Shane, have been doing this for 10 years?
No, he, the cop. The cop said he's been doing it for 10 years.
And what was the relevance of that?
I don't really know. I guess it just makes him believe that he's right in what he's doing.
Okay, so this was the other cop or the cop who told you that he smelled a ticket coming?
The other cop. That was his partner's.
Okay. And so then what happened?
Well, let's see. After he said he smelled a ticket coming my way, I just kind of figured in my own logical mind, well, you know, if that's the way they're going to do it, then they're going to do that anyway. So I said, I just looked at him and shrugged my shoulders. I said, oh, well, you know, you're going to do what you're going to do. You know, and I wasn't rude to the guy or nothing like that. I just said, you're going to do what you're going to do, and I'm going to do what I'm going to do. You said I'm legal, so I'm legal. So I couldn't figure out why they were still fucking with me.
And so then what happened?
So then he wrote me a ticket. Then he told me, he says, well, I'm not the one actually giving you the ticket. Manfred's the one who's going to give you the ticket. Like, as if he's still held out to give, you know, people on the mall tickets if he wants to or whatever, which is total bullshit.
And the point here, interestingly enough, is that Manfred Srinath, if this officer is right, he was making a citizen's arrest of Shane. I don't know what the situation is, not having seen the ticket. Have you seen the ticket, Tim?
Yeah, I have seen the ticket. There was nothing on there about a citizen's arrest, but Manafree has been citizen arrested.
Manafree?
Yeah, Manafree, excuse me.
I think it's Manafree. It could be Manafee. I think it's Manafree.
According to what I read on the, I think it was actually written by you, on the internet in 2003, and I know that was, you know, years ago, a homeless man that had coffee thrown on him.
The article calls him Manfree Srinath.
Yes,
so maybe
I'm sorry.
Maybe we're getting it wrong, or maybe the Metro got it wrong. I apologize, Mr. Srinath. Why don't we call you that so we don't malign your name here. Well, the point I'm making is, yeah, I mean, citizen's arrests are where a citizen observes a crime, the officer isn't present, and he then or she then communicates to the officer, I wish to have this man arrested. I saw a crime. Prepared to testify in court. The officer then is under no obligation. They used to be prior to 2003. They used to have to take the man or woman into custody, but at least to write a citation. They're not required to do so. So this officer was making a decision to do so. He was making a decision himself. He wasn't simply taking it as a report and saying to Mr. Srinath, go down to the DA or go to the city attorney and try to get this person prosecuted. We've got all the information. We have his address. We know who he is. If you want to press the matter, the city attorney may pick it up. I can't write a citation yet because I choose not to. I don't think it's, you know, I don't think that saying "get away from me, you fucker" or you know, "you are such a fucker" or whatever he said, is in response to your tirade or in response to your outburst, is necessarily an indication of panhandling with obscene language. It has nothing to do with panhandling. Therefore, it would be wrong for me to do that. And I guess it's interesting you pointed out that this guy was called there by
Shane.
By Shane himself because, in essence,
he was
being threatened.
Yeah.
He was being threatened. I don't think he felt threatened.
No,
let's put it this way. You and I weren't there, and maybe Shane is giving us a false story. Maybe the employee either didn't hear the whole thing that you talked to, or maybe he or she didn't hear it properly, or maybe misinterpreted, or maybe they have a grudge against Mr. Srinath. But, you know, based upon my previous experience with Mr. Srinath in 2003 when he angrily, he didn't threaten my life or anything, but he was speaking in a belligerent manner, demanding I leave the sidewalk in front of his restaurant. And I said, no, you know, it's a public sidewalk, you know, live with it.
I read the stuff that you wrote, of course. And
he also threw hot coffee on one protester and then on another, and he finally got a citation for it from the police after they'd been repeatedly called. So, I mean, there's a history there. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, history does not prove that he's a culpable in this situation. But
there was one interesting fact in all that stuff.
Go ahead.
That the language that he used was identical to what Shane described, you know. We don't like your kind, which was exactly what was said in 2003, you know, according to what was, again, written. I wasn't there, but it's always...
And this raises the other issue of hate crime against a class of people. Of course, homeless people are not considered a class in this situation because they're just homeless, right? They're just an economic class. They're not racial. They're not gender. They're not sexual preference. They're not age. They're not disabled. They're just... But, of course, Shane is disabled.
Yes.
But, of course, you know, then the question is, Mr. Serenith be interpreted as saying, we don't like AIDS-disabled people on the sidewalk nearby? I doubt it. That would be a hard case to prove, probably. Yeah. But in any case, what happened here was the police department, not some overheated, frankly bigoted merchant, blew his stack. That's not the issue. That can happen, you know, and we regret it, and we'd like to see it change, and let's all be friends and all that sort of thing. But the police colluded with this, and apparently, this is a pattern of behavior. I mean, I've seen it happen before. I'm concerned that it not be a pattern. I know it is a pattern of behavior. I got to say that. I mean, I don't have all the evidence here to lay out before you for those of you who are skeptical, but it's my general sense that merchants, almost without exception, are in close. It happened to me 3 years ago when we were trying to urge a boycott of the Pacific Trading Company when they masterminded, with police department money, mind you, the moving of the fence in front of the Pacific Trading Company, the railing. If you know, there are three large planters downtown. One of them is located in front of the Pacific Trading Company on Pacific Avenue. Musicians and others used to sit there in front of Pacific Trading Company, which also has the Irish Bar. What's the name of that place? It's on the second floor.
I don't drink.
You don't drink. Get it together, matey. What are you, a weenie? Come on, man. Anyway.
Everyone knows where it is. It's the Irish Bar right there.
Well, there's a couple of Irish bars in town,
yeah.
Actually. And
the one next to Borders. So.
Anyway, you know, the police came in, and I was arrested for showing a video of both the how the merchants were behaving, and this particular merchant, I guess it was, the hell were their names, the owners of that store, the Pacific Trading Company, and we showed a TV video on the sidewalk, and we were arrested for not having a permit for amplified sound, although the first time ever such an arrest or citation had been done. That was under the professional sponsorship of course, Sergeant Butchie Baker, who you can hear more about on Sunday, by the way, at 7:30 in the morning when Thomas Levitt is playing tapes about the 10 women who accused him of sexual molestation or improper conduct, and the city council initially took up the issue and then quickly dropped it like a hot potato.
Oh, and Rockin being such the feminist, I thought.
Rockin was not on the council at the time.
Oh.
However, I didn't hear him making a public outcry calling for, you know, some change, and I think he... I don't recall ever hearing Rodkin say a bad word about any police officer on the force subsequent to his much-trumpeted support of the discovery of the Code Blue police brutes who were beating up and perhaps killing homeless people in the late 70s and early 80s. He constantly, you know, rolls out that old turkey as an indication of what a great fan of police control and oversight he is, but... It's like his talking about rent control. Last time he supported rent control was in 1982. And he'll tell you again and again, well, the majorities were less and less for rent control. I mean, every time we tried it, it got more and more. Actually, there was no majority for rent control, and therefore we should not try it again. We failed in 1982. We'd fail again if we tried it.
I was one of those people beat up in the 80s.
You know, I should ask you about that. I probably will. In fact, maybe... Do we want to interrupt this Shane thing, or should we finish it first? What do you think?
I don't know how long the tape is, but...
Another 5 minutes.
Let's finish the Shane.
All right, this is Shane Maxfield talking about an incident at Lulu Carpenter's where he was essentially assaulted by a merchant who came over and abusively demanded with threats that he leave. He called the police at 911, and instead he was cited for saying, you fucker, to the guy after the guy had... repeatedly threatened him and abused him, and this is a man with person with AIDS who is, you know, no threat to this guy. In fact, the opposite seemed to be the case, based on the accounts I've heard. Mr. Serenith versus the Bunny.
I think if anyone met Shane and talked to him, they would not find him threatening. I mean, He's just not a threatening type of guy, just like I'm not a threatening type of guy.
Yeah, well,
especially
let's
in
more
a sitting position, you know.
In a sitting position. You know, you don't want to do that downtown. The merchants have gone to great lengths to keep the sidewalks clear of traffic so that the people can come and go and spend their money, all right?
Yes, but he was legal.
He was little, yeah.
Legal.
Hey, you know, legal. Well, we'll take care of that with the next council meeting. Hang on.
And so then the cop starts writing me out the ticket, and almost like he was wanting me to be like he was concerned who I was going to have a grudge against, you know. So he was telling me, he was making sure that I was aware that it was Manafree who was making this happen, you know, which I think is total bullshit, you know. I've seen these cops, you know, play people against each other, you know. I've seen these cops turn kids against each other. I've seen, you know, these cops are responsible for a lot of the stabbings and stuff that happen out here. You know, they cause a lot of the shit that happens out here, you know, by turning people against each other, you know.
Now, Manafree, what was he doing while this cop was saying this and writing the ticket?
He was just talking about how he can do this and he can do that and he can do this and he can do that and he can do this.
Do you remember anything particular he said that he could do?
Just make my life hell and this and that. Just basically, he just made threats on my life, like I can make your life this and I can make your life miserable. And
any time the officer ask you to listen to Manafree and hear his side of the story or something?
Huh?
Because that's what I think Tim got that impression when he talked to me about it.
Oh no, he just made me just sit there and listen to his lecture, his fucking spew.
Manafree's lecture?
Yeah, his stupid spew about how he can do this and he can do what he wants. And
what did the officer say that introduced Manafree's lecture that indicated you had to listen to it?
Every time I would try to tell the cops to get the guy away from me, because I kept begging the cops to get him away from me, that I didn't want to talk to him, I had no interest in his opinion. The cops kept saying, "No, you have to listen to him. You have to listen to him. Listen to him."
And can you remember any specific comments that Manafree then made that were, should we say, set up and sanctioned by the police?
I don't know what that. What do you mean?
Well, what I mean, the police provided a protective zone for him to rail away at you, apparently.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Remember what he said? Anything he said specifically?
Yeah, if I didn't leave, he was going to make my life hell.
He said that in front of the police.
Yeah, I've told the cops even to make him apologize for that, and that would be an admission of guilt, and he did. Because he wanted me to listen to him so damn badly.
When did he apologize? At what point?
He apologized when he wanted me to listen to him so badly that he said, "Okay, if I apologize, will you listen to me?" And so then I thought, well, that might be kind of good, you know, to get him to apologize for it, because in front of the cop, because that's an admission of guilt.
So what exactly were the words of his apology?
He said, "Okay, yeah, I'm sorry for, you know, for threatening you or whatever."
Did he use the word threatening?
I don't know. I'm not sure about that, because I don't have a tape recorder on me, and I don't have, you
know. In the future, carry a tape recorder at all times.
Yeah, well, you know, you're kind of catching me at an off time, too, Robert. You know, this is late in the day for me, and I'm really tired, so.
Well, I appreciate you giving me this account. And then how much longer did you stay after getting the ticket?
I didn't. I waited for, as soon as Donna pulled up, I was out of there.
So you were just waiting for her?
I was just waiting for her, man.
Now, who called the cops? You or Manafree?
I called them. And he said he also called them. But according to Tim, when Tim did his homework, I was the only one on record having called the cops. So which pisses me off, because that tells me that the cop, from the very start, went and talked to Manafree from the very start as if he had called the cops. And I was the one who called them. They should have came to me.
Did he ask you if he could assist you in any way?
No.
Well, probably the man was afraid of rabbits. Obviously, that was his problem. Anyway, we've been talking with
Shane.
Shane, thank you. And for those who go to Lulu Carpenter's, like to know any stories you have about what other merchants downtown are doing.
Maxwell, it's Max Field.
Thank you. Max Field. Maxwell, not the coffee, but the person. Maxwell House, of course, is a famous coffee. Thank you, Mr. Maxfield. Here in front of Farmer's Market, the man distributing literature, Backyard Barbecue. What is this, sir?
It's a fundraiser for Simba King Yard at the Coastline, Sunday, 2 to 4. Live jazz. Come check it out.
Fair enough. How did the last fundraiser go? I hear you.
So, Jim, that That was Shane's account of an incident that happened at Lulu Carpenter's. I don't see the phones ringing off the hook, folks. Now's your time to call in and contribute, 427-3772, 427-FRSC, if you'd like to. In the studio with me is Tim Rumford. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Robert Norris, and we are, of course, broadcasting at 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. And don't forget that, or if you do, I will keep reminding you and so will other broadcasters, whether you like it or not. So I guess the next step here, as I understand it, is getting... I'm not quite sure. It's a peculiar situation that Mr. Srinath apologized, and I don't quite know what that meant. First, I think when I first talked to Shane, I heard it described as a sarcastic apology, and there is some indication that there was a...
It was almost sounding like maybe he was trying to get out of his threat, you know, in front of the police officer on record.
And Shane was trying to get him to go on record as indicating that he had threatened and he was sorry that he threatened, but that means he had threatened in order to get the police to at least pay some attention. Because I think one thing missing from Shane's account here, which you mentioned Shane had said earlier, was that the police officer said, I can't arrest him for, you know, making threats against you unless he threatened your life.
That's what Shane told me. You know, I wasn't there.
Right. I think
I did talk to the one employee who, you know, basically said everything that I told her that she saw was true, but she didn't hear every word.
Well, I've talked to Attorney Kate Wells about this issue, and my understanding is that Paul Sanford would be willing to defend Shane in court if this citation ever reaches court, which we all doubt it will because it's a bogus citation. And they went through a lot of crap, the city did, once they tried a similar prosecution against, as I mentioned before, John Maurer, another homeless man 3 years before, 3 years ago. But even if they don't go to court, there's a lawsuit here against the police department, perhaps against Manafree Srinath, for a false report. And this is an interesting point here. One alternative for you, if you find yourself in Shane Maxfield's position, where some merchant is coming down with a bogus complaint against you, if it's clearly bogus, if it's made up in some way, as for instance, well, I myself was arrested at City Council 4 years ago for raising my arm in a mock Nazi salute to indicate that the then mayor was acting like a fascist because he was threatening to arrest a peace activist who was trying to speak at the microphone during the proper oral communications time that the mayor had inadvertently cut short. And one council member thought I was acting indecorously and had me stop them, had the mayor stop the meeting and demand that I leave. I declined to leave, so they had me arrested under the charge of disrupting a meeting. Now, I didn't disrupt a meeting, obviously. People who disrupted the meeting were the people who stopped the meeting because it was going on without my doing anything. I just raised my arm for 2 seconds.
Did you go over your five-minute limit?
I wasn't even up there, and there was no five-minute limit at that time for the consent agenda items, which happened later. But the fact of the matter is, what I tried to then do when I was arrested by Sergeant Baker was I tried to file a report. I tried to make a citizen's arrest of the mayor. That is to say, I tried to get the sergeant to issue a citation to the mayor charging him with making a false report, claiming I was disrupting a meeting when I was doing nothing of the kind. So disrupting a meeting, one can break council rules. And that may be, you know, that may be within the province of a council to say, aha, you broke a rule. But to claim that in the legal terminology, that's really disrupting a meeting, has to be a step further. And if you're claiming that, you have to show substantial disruption. And that's why I was not tried last month for disrupting a meeting after being hauled into court 11 times over a period of 15 months on a subsequent incident, which Mayor Rotkin was responsible for having me arrested for. So here again, if you are hassled on the street and some overheated merchant decides they want to file a citizen's arrest against you, you know, file a complaint and make a citizen's arrest, which means they'll give you a citation based on what the citizen is saying. You then, if you think that the arrest is false, you file a report. You attempt to make a citizen's arrest in turn and say, all right, I'd like to arrest this man because he's violating the law, which is making a false police report. And that's what was done frequently in Southern California by activist David Bush, who was a homeless activist, who I think I've mentioned in past shows, used to walk into restaurants with a cardboard sign around his head saying, houseless. trying to make the point that if you're going to fuck with me, good, fuck with me now. In other words, don't. I'm not going to try to curl up and blend in. I'm not going to try to kind of cringe and hide in the corner and hope you won't hassle me. I'm going to order a cup of coffee like anybody else and expect you to serve me like anybody else. And he apparently had some success with that particular approach. I've written about it, and those articles will soon be posted on the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org. So, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, as I announced 5 minutes ago. And I also said that, and it's still true, that Tim Rumford is in the studio with me. And Tim, you, you know, there's the sexy issue of your being brutalized by the police in the early 80s, the Santa Cruz Police Department.
It is an interesting story.
Why don't we get that story? Why don't you give it a three-minute spin, and then we'll get into the more important issues of Medicare and Medi-Cal, which are more current.
Yes, it's very much more important. But I think this story is important, I'll say really briefly, because there are a lot of kids on the street right now. In fact, I probably saw 100 new ones today, and a lot of them were getting arrested. I got arrested when I was 13 for a pound and a half of leaf that I was going to, leaf marijuana, that I was going to give away to somebody. I had come up on a Greyhound bus from Big Sur, got off the Greyhound bus, went to the park, with somebody I didn't know was being followed by the police for handing a pill to somebody else.
What year was this?
This was about 1982. I was 13, I'm 40, so figure the math, but about 1982. So we went to the park. At that time, the park was a lot different than it is now. It was mostly a lot of drum circles and people smoking pot. And
this is San Lorenzo Park.
San Lorenzo Park,
yes. The no-smoking zone.
Yeah, it was a lot different back then. Very much so. This is when the Cooper House was raging, you know, and all that stuff. So
this is the park that now, if you walk into it after dark, it's illegal.
Yeah, yeah. So we sat down and we're proceeding to smoke a joint. And suddenly, about five undercover agents just came running towards us and grabbed me, threw me to the ground. And they had been following him, and we actually noticed them before and had gone to the park actually to try to get away from them. Anyways, they arrested me, they arrested him, they took me to the county building, they took him, of course, to jail. He was an adult. And as they processed me through the county building, the police that arrested me were actually quite ignorant. They didn't know the difference between leaf or buds. I had to explain it to them along the way, why I was so disappointed that I had gotten busted for a bunch of worthless, you know, bag of nothing. anyways, after they waited and fingerprinted me and stuff, they brought me upstairs to the county building to a guy who was on a desk, which I can only assume was put there because he had some problems maybe out in the field. Because they made a little satirical joke, because I was a very small, hippie little kid, that, oh, this guy's a big threat, watch out for him. But they were joking. And after they left, he pulled out a knife and stuck it in the desk.
The officer
that was supposed to really just be watching me and write a report after I'd been processed. And I was at the upper level of the county building.
Now were you handcuffed? Or?
Not. I had been unhandcuffed at this point and was left in this man's
jurisdiction.
Yeah. I was just at his desk, and he was supposed to just watch me for a few minutes. And they made a little joke, you know, watch this guy, he's dangerous. And he took out a pocket knife and slammed it into the thing and just started calling me every name in the book. You know, you white trash, you're the reason for all our problems, and just really going off on me. And I'm pretty used to handling my temper. And then he started talking about my mom and how he fucked my mom and how, you know, just on and on and on and on and on. So finally, I took a coffee cup up and I did throw it across the room, missing his head and breaking on the wall. He grabbed me, threw me into a little room that had one table, one chair, and one phone. He handcuffed me extremely hard, and I had black and blue and purple marks, you know, on my wrists. Put me on the chair, kicked it out from underneath me, started beating me up. This went on for several minutes. I was completely helpless. Then he picked up the phone and was just about to slam it over my head. And at this point, I could hear other cops banging on the door going, oh, Bob's going off again or whatever, you know. And they broke down the door and stopped him just before he landed that phone on my head. Now,
they actually broke down the door?
Yeah, they broke down the door.
We have a caller. Let's see if there's some commentary on your story here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Ken. Hello. I think it's that phantom caller again. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, they broke down the door, and it was like, you know, I don't remember his name, but Joe's going off again, and they had to, like, calm him down. He was, like, post-traumatic stress or something. I don't know. Too much coffee. I wanted this to be bring up to court, and I adamantly told my public defender, you know, I want pictures of my marks, which they did, and I want this brought up in court. I don't care about whether my charges are dropped or not. I want this brought up in court. I sat in juvenile hall for 3.5 weeks. Court time came. I told them again 5 minutes before we went in, I wanted to make sure that I got to speak to the judge about what happened, and he said, oh, yeah, I was going to bring it up. Well, all this legal talk started happening that I had no really idea what was going on. I was 13. I didn't understand all the legal mumbo-jumbo that was going on. I didn't even, when we walked out, understand whether I had been prosecuted or let go, or I didn't know. And so I asked him, he said, no, you're free to leave. And I said, well, wait a second, I never got to talk about what happened. He said, well, you had all the charges dropped, so I just didn't think we should push any buttons. And I was extremely upset about it, but I was 13. And so, you know, that was the end of that.
Ah, those public defenders, always there defending the public.
Yes.
Or let's put it this way. I guess their job was to get the charges dropped against you, although one would think that they might be more concerned also with getting the issue before the judge. Probably the judge didn't give a shit, is my
no,
fear.
They had worked it all out before I even went into court. You know, he told me what to say, actually. He said, say yes to this, say no to this, say yes to this, say no to this, say yes to this, and then this is going to happen. And I said, okay, but I'm going to get to talk about what happened, right? And he said, yes, but it never happened. You know.
So he was lying to you, in other words.
Yeah, exactly. They all knew what was going on.
Mm. And so that's your attack on our. That's why you're such a bigot against the police force in Santa Cruz. You had one unfortunate incident, and you've never forgotten
it. Yeah, that's true. But I'm not actually. There are some police officers that I have respect for down there that do make an effort to get to know the homeless people. They know. You know, some of them that are mentally ill, some of them that aren't, and they make an effort to try to. And then there are others that don't, you know, that have serious.
Can you name one who actually makes an effort?
All right. I have to say.
Oh, well, gotcha.
Well, you're going to take serious tasks with me to this, but I think that Pam has gone way overboard at times.
CSO Pam Bechtel, the. Fastest ticket book in the West?
Yes, fastest ticket book in the West, and I 100% agree with that. I watched her make several arrests and have her deal with the younger population downtown by the bus station. And I've seen her act very compassionately, and I've also seen her act very wrongly, you know. But I have seen her make an effort to get to know certain people, certain homeless people, you know, such as CJ or other people who have been down here for 20 years who she just knows aren't, you know, out there causing trouble, and she leaves them alone. Now, I'm not saying that's great. I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm just saying, you know, I'm not saying that every single officer out there is bad. Maybe they are.
Well, I asked the question. I'm not trying to say that I've never seen a good action by a good officer. My focus is on police abuse when it happens.
Yeah.
And occasionally I'll commend a police officer, particularly when they return my stolen car.
Yeah.
Which has happened on two occasions. You know, I want to commend the police force. Of course, on one occasion, the guy was riding around 80 miles an hour through the streets and was hard to ignore. And on the other occasion, on both occasions, I was treated courteously and fairly by the police department. I thanked them for their help. And I'm not saying that there isn't even a function for the police department in theory. in practice, in these kinds of cases, I'm glad that I got my car back. I mean, I wonder, though, how that weighs against the day-to-day grind that most people feel who are in a certain class in Santa Cruz.
There's a larger and larger growing population of younger people here, like the age that I was, you know, when I was running around.
You know this because you do a Monday night meal, right?
Well, actually, I haven't had a lot. I get mostly the over 30 crowd because they do the 29 and younger thing at the church. But I went down. I do walk around, and when I see arrests happening, like today, I was in front of the bus station, and Pam Bechtel was there arresting people and talking to the homeless youth there, and she knew all of them by name. and she was arresting a woman for being drunk in public, although I didn't see her doing anything, you know.
Who was doing this arrest?
Pam.
Uh-huh.
And she handcuffed the woman. She was wearing gloves. This is a new thing they're doing now, where as they touch any homeless person, they put on gloves.
Well, you know that homelessness is catching, and you don't want to catch homelessness.
And
they
I found that a little demeaning to the person that was being arrested, or at least at this point in the process of being arrested. She started crying. This woman, you know, had some issues, obviously, and she was very distraught and started crying. And Pam did, you know, pat her on the back and say, "It's going to be okay." You know,
they're there.
I'm just going to arrest you.
Let me just take these handcuffs and put them on you here.
Yes.
What was she arrested for?
Drunk in public.
How drunk was she?
You know.
Was she unable to take care of herself?
No.
That's the standard for drunk in public.
No, you know what? She was not. When I saw the arrest taking place.
Pam was making a false arrest.
Yeah.
Sorry, Pam.
Yeah.
Next, you know, I'm afraid we have another black mark there on the page. You can't arrest someone. I mean, that's
discretionary
abuse by the police department.
I said, was she screaming? Was she yelling? Because I got there a little, you know, late as the arrest was happening, and all the kids were there. And they said, no, she's drunk. But the guy said, so am I. You know, he says, but I never get harassed. He said, but she happened to walk by, and what happened was she saw a Pepsi bottle. And so she wanted to know what was inside the Pepsi bottle. And she opened it and smelled it, and there was booze in there. And so then they started opening up her backpack. And like, now
with
that
or without her consent, you know?
Without her consent. And maybe it's not a backpack because it was a duffel bag, but I know from law that you can't.
The rule there,
a,
folks, is when that starts to happen, you immediately say,
that's
you, do not
your
have
house.
My, you do not have my consent to search. Now, they may do it anyway. And indeed, if they're doing a search incident to an arrest, it's legal. If they're doing a search incident to a detention, they can only patch it down, and so they like to play around with whether it's a detention or an arrest. But the fact of the matter is that maybe she wasn't arrested for drunk in public. Maybe she was arrested for open container because.
Or they could have ran her, and she could have had some previous.
Right.
You know,
so
stuff.
Perhaps Pam was doing that for that reason. But I mean, again, we don't know. I don't know the circumstances. So.
Yeah.
So I'm sure, Officer Bechtel, if you're listening to this tape, if you made a legitimate arrest for, I don't know, maybe it's some warrants for more serious crimes like sleeping outside.
Yes.
You know, that might be a little different. I mean, after all, we don't want these homeless people sleeping at night. Occasional open container, perhaps, but sleeping, you know, it leads to other things.
She was also not a kid, either. She was happened to be hanging out in that area where the kids hang out, you know. I'm seeing a huge rise just in the last month, and the other homeless people I'm talking to are also seeing a huge rise in the amount of people coming in to the city. And I really have a deep fear, and I'm seeing a deep, an increased lack of apathy from the people that live in this town. And
lack of apathy or apathy?
I'm sorry, a lack of empathy and an increased apathy about these issues. And, you know, the issues are very diverse, but they tend to see, you know, some of these kids that are, you know, a lot of them are doing drugs or out on the streets. Maybe they had a bad family life. Whatever landed them there. If drug addiction is a disease, then maybe we should start treating it as one and stop arresting people and harassing them. But regardless of all that, the amount of homeless people on the streets, as I was walking down the streets, there was more homeless than there were tourists or shoppers or even just regular, you know.
What time of day was this?
This was noon.
Wow.
I mean, we
clean those homeless out. Send the police through
a
couple of raids.
Well, they were. They were sort of doing a sweep today as I was walking down the street putting up a few little notices.
posting them legally.
Yeah, of course.
So let me ask you... You say that you saw more than one arrest? You saw Bechtel arresting a woman who...
No, I saw another officer who I do not know the name of arresting another teen in the same area. They were sort of doing, like I said, a sweep of that general area.
What area was this?
Right in front of the bus station.
I've heard it was said earlier by Musical Mike that played a segment before you came in where he pointed out now they're making it illegal to sit on the... flat areas near the metro.
Yes, and I heard some new stuff about that, too.
I'll hear about that.
A couple kids pointed out to me that that new law has taken effect, and also that after the lights go out...
No new law, by the way. It sounds like a new edict by somebody.
Yeah, a new whatever. Also, when the lights go on, so when it turns dark and the automatic lights turn on, you are not allowed to panhandle in any fashion with a sign, without a sign, in near the bus station at all, period.
Not near the bus station, anywhere in Santa Cruz, if you ask for anything of value silently or verbally after dark, you're guilty of an infraction. Do it twice, misdemeanor, punishable by up to 6 months in jail and $1,000 fine. Period.
With a, even if you're with a sign?
Correct. Even with a sign. If you hold up a sign, you thought the First Amendment was alive? Well,
you know, they're selectively enforcing that, of course, but they're doing it in front of the bus station 10 times more than they're doing it anywhere else.
It has to do with breaking up groups of people that they don't like.
And, yes.
You know, just as putting in the change machine across from the bus depot had that purpose, just as removing the benches from in front of Borders had that purpose, just as establishing the area in front of New Leaf Market as a merchant zone, where it used to be a zone where everybody could come and enjoy themselves, and now it's, you know, well... I mean, I've got to say about the two merchants that there are, you know, Alfresco's and Cafe Campesino are reasonable in allowing people to use that space, but the previous merchants were not.
Yeah, I have to say that, I don't want to badmouth every merchant down there. The kiosk lady that runs the first kiosk there right on the corner, she's been very...
Alfresco's, Marilyn of Alfresco's.
Yes, thank you. And Marilyn, she's been extremely nice to me about my homeless feeding program, and left food out every time. You know, she leaves extra food out. I talk to her if there's any trash or any garbage, please let me know. You know, she's been very, very supportive and very nice.
Safe Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression has been there for, God, is it almost three years?
Three years now.
Every week, every Wednesday from 6 to 10, violating the downtown ordinances by, you know, playing with amplified sound occasionally, by being within 10 feet of a building, by sometimes sitting down. There are people who listen to it, sit down next to a building, God help us.
Yeah.
All these things happen. They don't go get a permit. They're there for more than an hour. All these things that we took for granted in the 80s and even in the 90s that you could do have been criminalized by merchants intent on imposing their own stamp on the mall and supported by politicians who describe this as a public safety issue, and of course, it's nothing of the kind.
Yeah.
It's a lifestyle issue, and it's a form of enforcing a kind of cultural conformity. In the studio with me is Tim Rumford. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides, and we do have a call-in number if anybody wants to call in again. 427-3772 is the number. A quick update from Fresno for those who want to check indiebay.org/ there's a shopping cart roundup. Central Valley, that's the section of Indie Bay you should go to. Attacks against the homeless in Fresno continue. The frequency and intensity is increasing. Their homes have been destroyed, the few possessions they own taken from them, and now the city has passed a shopping cart ordinance which can result in a $1,000 fine and up to 1 year in jail. We talked about the debate over this ordinance about a month ago, and there's some good photos here. Actually, there's sad photos of four police officers rounding up shopping carts. And here's the article, Shopping Cart Roundup by Mike Rhodes. Attacks on the homeless continue this week as the Fresno Police Department conducted raids on numerous encampments on Sunday, October 8th. The early morning raid at the H and San Benito Street encampment woke many residents up as police arrived to round up shopping carts. The photos accompanying this article were taken by one of the homeless residents who had a camera. Numerous cameras have been given to the homeless to document attacks like this by the police and other government agencies. The police also has numerous bunch of website references for those who are interested about the attacks on the homeless and the shopping cart issue. The police also went to a homeless encampment near E and Ventura Street on Sunday in Fresno, where they took people's shopping carts. Some of the shopping carts belonged to the residents of the homeless encampment. They were given to them by groups that refurbish old carts and give them to the homeless so they can move their possessions around or pick up bottles and cans to recycle. The police arrived before people woke up and began emptying the contents of the carts and loaded them onto the truck pictured below. One of the women at this site said that when the police approached her cart, she asked them for their name and badge number. When she did that, the officer turned and left without giving his ID. Her cart was not taken. It was the only cart that I saw in the area that had not been taken by the police on Sunday. On Wednesday, October 11th, the police returned to the H in San Benito encampment. They lined all the men up on one side and the women on the other. The homeless people were searched and their names run through the police databases to look for outstanding warrants. Maybe Pam Bechtel can be sent to Fresno to check these things out.
She would be good there.
Yeah, or other information that could be used to further detain or arrest them. They were not allowed to leave to go to the bathroom, and at least one person defecated as he waited to be freed. The police captain told the assembled people that they were trespassing on private property and that he would be back. People that I interviewed said the captain declared that when he comes back, he will throw all of their property away. In response to these ongoing attacks, community activists are planning a series of events to support the homeless. Here are the details. Saturday, October 21st, prayer circle at 4 p.m. Join us in a circle of prayer to raise City Hall's conscience on how their quality of life ordinances allow the police power to target and abuse people. 5:30 p.m. rally on Saturday, October 21st. That's, I guess, a week from this coming Saturday. Support the homeless at the new Tent City, to be located at the steps of Fresno City Hall. Santa Cruz, get a clue. 7 p.m. testifying. Listen to people testify why they are homeless. Listen to their stories of how the police abuse them with the blessings of City Hall. 8 p.m. music, poetry, and spoken words. All are invited to participate. Food Not Bombs will serve food. And 9 p.m. all-night vigil on the steps of City Hall. Candles, prayers, and dreams for justice and shelter for the homeless. So who wants to start this in Santa Cruz, folks? Give a call, 427-3772. If you're afraid of calling in or you want to talk privately, you can give me a call off air at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I'm in the studio with Tim. Any comments on Fresno before we turn to the main subject you've been waiting patiently for half an hour to talk about?
No problem.
Changes in Medi-Cal and Medicare in the last few years that have cut it way back in Santa Cruz.
I've been reading a lot about this kind of stuff happening all over the country, not just there, but all over. I think I sent you the article about the homeless guys that were being fed crack and then had it deducted from their wages and just keeping them addicted inside this farm where they were, I think, harvesting cabbage. Just real odd stuff like that. But a lot of police abuse, a lot of, rounding up the homeless, ending food programs, hassling Food Not Bombs and other people that feed. I'm really, truly frightened that they're going to start doing that here as the homeless population rises. That I don't think our council, city council, will put up with the amount of homeless people that are coming into Santa Cruz.
Now, wait a minute. The enlightened city council will be elected in November, which will probably include
Rockins and Matthew.
The terrible two or the gruesome twosome. And, of course, somebody like Lynn Robinson or Bruce Van Allen. Though Simba Kenyatta, by the way, Huff has endorsed Simba Kenyatta, the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom organization, meeting yesterday.
He needs a sign.
He needs a sign, yes.
He drove all through the city today. He has no sign.
No signs for Simba. Oh, Simba, where are you, Simba? I've actually invited him to call in on this show and advertise his backyard barbecue fundraiser, which I think is happening next Saturday. I'm not sure. Don't have the information.
It is Saturday, but I don't know the time.
I'm not quite sure when. I might be able to find a little notice of it before the show goes on. Before our show ends, that is. Half an hour left, actually.
Yeah, we were going to ask Simba about issues before we actually
Right. I actually informed Simba that the endorsement was contingent upon his agreeing whether he wins or loses the election in winter if the Santa Cruz homeless do something like the Fresno homeless are doing, which is go to City Hall and say, okay, folks, time to come clean. We got no place to stay. We got police arresting us. We have no place to be safely together. We're going to do it here unless you can find some other place where we can legally be. But he supports such a protest. And I would like to see him actually pitch a tent there with the homeless people. And I say that because I'm really tired of liberals ducking and covering on this issue. And Simba, while I regard him as having a good heart on the issue, has not been talking about the issue much at all. The sleeping ban, which is the law in Santa Cruz that criminalizes homeless people after 11 o'clock at night, or covering up with blankets after 11 o'clock at night, which impacts 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people, for all you newcomers out there, because that's how many homeless people are in the city and there's space tonight for, guess how many? about 28, actually, I believe it is, although it can go as high as 42 in the so-called emergency shelter.
And you walk all the way down there, you may or may not get in.
After you wait for a line. No, you won't get in. I mean, In fact, it's generally agreed if you are given a ticket by the police, you can go there, if you walk all the way to the Homeless Service Center, get Marcus to sign it off or some other person to sign it off, and then take it all the way to the court, get a court date, go before the judge, and he or she, at least Kim Baskett, I think, has been, I believe she's regularly signing off these citations. Of course, if you don't get to court, if you, for example, fail to appear, even though under the federal court's ruling, which Los Angeles is obeying, there should be no action against you, that in fact it is criminal for the city to proceed to criminalize you for it is cruel and unusual punishment, a violation of your constitutional rights, punishable by sanctions, punishable by fines. In Santa Cruz, that's not recognized. So instead, you're sent through this maze here in Santa Cruz, which, of course, is part of the attempt to make it as inhospitable as possible to people who are homeless.
Aren't we supposed to be the hate-free city or the hate-zone-free city?
Hate-free zone, right. Now, that's with respect to gay people, not with respect to homeless people.
Oh.
There's a difference. Okay, get straight. Particularly upper-class gay people who can have the money to spend in coffee shops. That's
right.
Right, or, you know, trendy students, you know, who can engage in activity.
I thought it was just hate in general. But.
No, please. I want to point out on the anti-war front, World Can't Wait protests against the war, which mobilized a pittance of people compared to the numbers that were happening
years ago.
You know, 3 years ago or even, you know, well, actually 3 years ago, 3 to 6,000. They are continuing events, and Students Against War, not connected with World Can't Wait. World Can't Wait had protests at the town clock a week ago. And I believe tonight they have some kind of an event around 7-Eleven controversy, you know. Intentional 9/11. Planes going into the 9-11 and the 9-11 stuff, which some people poo-poo, others sneer at, and others say how diverting this is. But, in fact, people are concerned about these three issues, which they're trying to do a coalition on, which is impeaching the Bush regime, restoring the Constitution, and getting out of Iraq, and, of course, this, you know, getting the truth out about 9-11 on all sides, what actually went down there. And I believe at the Vets Hall tonight there's a movie. I believe it's a free movie that's happening, in case people want to go see it. I'm not sure exactly when it starts. Either it might have already started or it may start at 8. So you might check Indy Bay to see that. Medicare, Medi-Cal, what's happened here in the last few years, Tim? Give us the update. How has it been getting worse or better?
Well, it's been getting worse. I'm disabled. There's different kinds of Medicare and Medi-Cal, and I'll break it down real quick, that people can get. If you're legally disabled, which a lot of people need to understand, only needs to mean that you cannot work part-time. It doesn't mean you can't work full-time. You only have to prove that you can't work full-time. A lot of people don't understand that. But in my case, I had, you know, a couple major problems, so I got through the system a little faster and maybe a little wiser than some of the other people. But when I started, there's a thing called general assistance. So a lot of the people on the streets can also sign up for what's called SSI. I get SSD. It's basically the same thing, but it's Social Security Supplemental Income that most of the people downtown are eligible for. The system is hugely almost unnavigable, and general aid is given while you're waiting for your up to 3-year appeal process of getting this aid, which amounts to about $700 to $900 a month, depending on your situation and if you've worked in the past, et cetera, et cetera. So as you're disabled and have no money and are trying to survive, everyone, unless you're blind or dismembered, is immediately sent. You have to go into appeal. You're immediately denied automatically. That's just the way it works. At that time, general aid was $350 a month, which they would give to you.
At what time?
This was in 1998. It was $350. They would give you that every month until you got your retro check, because it usually takes years to get this money, and then you'd have to pay it back. So it's not free money, it's a loan. And they make you go through all the appeals so that you get your money and they get their money. That has now dropped anywhere between $50 and $75 a month, which is a substantial difference. Also, there are no more advocates anymore. The center at Emmeline Street, where they had Medicare and Medi-Cal advocates, and this is where everyone goes to get everything, food stamps, medical care, their insurance for their prescriptions, all that kind of stuff. You used to be able to walk in and talk to your worker. You could call your worker on the phone, say, what's going on with my case? What's the problem? You know, and you could walk in there and in, you know, 10, 30 minutes, you could go talk to them. They didn't always have all the right facts, but you could go talk to them. They are now gone. They've been removed and replaced with a phone system. They now work out of a phone booth thing in Watsonville, and there are no...
Phone bank?
Phone bank, thank you. And there, you don't have a specific advocate. You just got a guy on the phone. it's become much harder for people to apply. Once they do apply, if they don't get a lawyer, and a lot of people don't know this, they're not going to go. Their chances of getting through without three appeals, meaning 3 years, are almost impossible. And there is one very good attorney that I will say that everyone should use if they are applying for Social Security Disability or SSI, and that is Terry LaPorte. He has an office right on the mall. This lawyer, who only handles these issues, was so nice that he gave me almost an entire refund on his couple thousand dollars because my case went through so fast. The reason my case went through so fast was I wrote the health commissioner about how I was unable to survive paying for my $700 in prescriptions a month on $350. That caused a big look at my case. I was given some money because they had screwed up $600 or something. Suddenly, my case started going through much faster. And suddenly, right after my first appeal, I got my money. I have watched other people downtown wait 3 years only to get turned down because they didn't get a lawyer. You can't do this without a lawyer. As much as people don't want to deal with these lawyers, they have to, or they're going to lose, and they're not going to get it. Once you get it, Bush's new Medicare prescription plan, I had encephalitis, so I have seizure disorder and some other problems, so I have to take some medicine that's very, very expensive. My prescriptions cost anywhere from $700 to $1,200 a month. For 3 years, I had to pay those out of pocket while I was waiting for my aid. that was all my retro money, basically, that paid for my prescriptions. Since Bush's new privatization of the Medicare plan, for a disabled person making $900 a month, I actually pay more for my prescriptions than I was paying once I got my aid. I used to have to pay nothing after fighting for a couple of years. Now I pay $5 a prescription, which may not sound like a lot, but when you're trying to live off $900 a month, and some people the less, some people seven, some people six, it is a lot. You know, 20, 30 bucks a month when you're getting a couple prescriptions is a lot of money. That's, you know, a month's food or whatever. So it's just a lot is being cut back. A lot of this has to do with some national issues, like, you know, faith-based money. They thought if they gave all this faith-based money out, they could start taking federal money out of the system, and it would make up for it. But it didn't work. And, you know, it's a travesty to me. And
all you have to do is become a Christian and maybe start a TV station and make a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, there's no advocates to tell the homeless people how to do it. And I've led a few of them through the system. And without it, a lot of them are just scared to even enter the Social Security office and start the process. You know, especially people who have, like, mental health issues, which are the people that need this the most. You know, they're out on the streets with mental health issues. These are the people that needed the most. These are the people that were kicked out of, you know, psychiatric units in the 80s from Reagan. left to fend for themselves on the streets, told that they could handle taking their medicine on time or whatever. These people don't know how to manage the system. You know, they don't know how to get through all this. And there are no advocates out there to lead them through it. And without it, I don't see how the average homeless person, and being homeless is a fucking job, and it's hard, could do it. And a lot of them just fail because they just give up. There was a guy that I watched standing on the corner, and I'm sure you met him, Robert, for 2 years waiting for his SSI. And he would just stand there with a nice little sign that said...
talking about Steve, maybe.
Yeah, right? I think it was...
He bikes around...
I think that's him. And he would stand with some real nice little sign. I don't remember what it said, but he was just waiting and waiting and waiting for his SSI money. 3 years later, it comes in. And then now I see him, and it's like, I'm still homeless. You know, I can't buy a house. I can't rent a house because I don't have enough money to even get a down payment. But at least I get some money.
You could move to Fresno and take up residence at the Fresno City Hall.
Yeah. Well, then that's the other problem is... They make it purposely so once you get your SSI or your SSD, you make just enough so that you qualify for nothing else. If me making $900 a month, I am allowed $4 a month in food stamps. They told me if I was a woman and had 10 children, I could get $1,500. That didn't help me. I don't know who can live on $900 a month in this city. It's pretty tough, and it's just consistently getting worse and worse and worse. General aid is something that people really relied on when they were waiting for their big aid, their big, you know, $300, $700, $800 a month, while they're waiting years and years for that, while the housing list has been shut down. It just reopened, but it was shut down for 2 years. While they're waiting and waiting and waiting, nothing's happening. They're getting poor. They're getting sicker. A lot of these people are sick. They're disabled. They're, you know, legitimately disabled. And they send you through a battery of doctors who are sent there to prove that you're not disabled. And once you get through all that, then maybe you might get a check. And then once you get that check makes sure that you make just enough money that you are not allowed anything else. No more support. That's it. And I just think that it's horrible. And we let Emmeline Street shut down that office and walk away without a word being said about it. I found out about it when I went to go talk to my own worker. I didn't get a letter in the mail or anything. I found out about 6 months ago when I went in to talk to my advocate and found out my advocate no longer existed, nor did the building. I mean, the building was there, but there was no one there. There was a sign on the door that said, you know, we have moved to Watsonville. It's now a call-in center. So I called and I said, can I speak to my worker number, blah, blah, blah. And they said, oh, we don't have workers anymore.
Well, that's part of the plan that Lynn Robinson mentioned, that we have a real problem here and that we're the county seat and the center of all these services. So homeless people flock here. It creates a real difficult situation. What we want to do is disperse the homeless. We're sending some to the east, some to the north, some to the south, and some to the west. You know, they say there's a very warm climate overseas. Plus, there are jobs in Iraq for soldiers.
Yeah.
Good paying positions, I understand.
Yeah, you know, interesting enough, I know somebody who wanted to be in the military his whole life, but they wouldn't take him because he had, I believe it was diabetes and one other pretty significant health problem. After Iraq, he signed up and they took him in a snap.
But well... We're running into the last 12 minutes of the show with this flood of calls. I don't know what to say. I'll be coming back on Sunday. I don't know if you will, Tim. I'll be playing a tape of picking up the issue of the Homeless Service Center that we talked about last time, which is the conglomeration. Well, there are four different agencies, or five actually at least, out there at 115 at Coral Street area, the Page Smith Community House, River Street Shelter, Rebel Lee Family Center, Homeless Persons Health Project, and the Homeless Service Centers and the ISSP program. ISSP is closing down, according to last week's Sentinel, even though the demand is increasing. And what they're going to do is they're going to build a $600,000 dormitory, which will house, what, 60 people or something?
I think it said 40 or 60.
40 or 60. And, of course, we're talking about 1,500 to 2,000 people outside.
And it's only for people who are truly willing to get off the streets, which means you have to be sober before you enter the building. You know, there's all these policies put on it so that there are very few people that are going to get those beds. This is not going to help the problem at all.
Well, we're going to be listening to an interview with a man who was an employee out there who is kind of blowing the whistle on some of the practices that went down. I'll be playing that on Sunday, and I encourage you to tune in for that. It'll be happening around 10 o'clock on Sunday morning. My show runs from 9:30 to 1. Also on Sunday, more on the city council's being forced to address the Butchie Baker scandal of 1992, and as I've mentioned before, then officer, now sergeant, Lauren Butchie Baker was accused by 10 women of sexual misconduct, and of course by a considerable number of homeless people of false arrests and
but
abusive
he must
behavior.
Have been drunk and molested by a couple pastors like Foley.
I don't know what to, I don't have all I know is he's still on the force, is still engaging in activity, and still the subject of my own lawsuit, which is proceeding against three mayors, two cops, and it'll be heard in federal court in March of 2007, unless it gets postponed again. Today, you may remember, is Native Indigenous Slaughter Day. Actually, that was the 9th, because they moved the holidays from their traditional days. October 12th is, quote, Christopher Columbus Day, to October 9th, because it's, I guess, the Monday, so they can, you know, turn this into a business scene. They can make the long weekend. They don't have to break up the week with these questionable holidays in the middle of the week. Why Christopher Columbus merits a holiday. Well, I mean, if you're going to be butchering 650,000 civilians in Iraq, according to the Lancet study, and continue to do so, maybe you need to have a mass murderer as Christopher Columbus as sort of one of your big heroes. And so I guess that does make some sense. Kind of sad situation there. There's going to be on October 17th a forum on desalinization, the Santa Cruz Community Meeting. I'll be talking about that on Sunday because the chief firm doing that project, that $3 million project, as I understand, involved in war profiteering, and the city council is ignoring that. Here's a call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, this is Gregory.
Hey, Gregory.
Good evening.
What's happening, sir?
You guys just sounded lonely over there, so I said I'd call in.
Thank you, Gregory.
It's all right, Gregory.
Hey, I want to appreciate your guest. I appreciate your guest, Tim. Speaking out like that, I'm well aware, at least some aspects of what he's up to.
Oh, I know you, Gregory.
And are you familiar, or did you see the latest DiCenzo cartoon, Robert?
Oh, yes, an attack on our good mayor, Cynthia Matthews, and her shadow mayor buddy, Mike Rotkin.
Yeah, Jackass the rerun. That was pretty humorous. I thought you might appreciate that.
I don't quite understand it. It has Cynthia Matthews and Mike Rotkin in a shopping cart coming out of a, breaking out of a building.
Well, if you've seen Jackass, there was this one scene where this gigantic shopping cart with about 10 people in it. I guess they were homeless. I don't know. And they go blashing into something. So that's basically where it's taken from film.
There are a couple of digs at them as Rotkin being the big supporter of the Coast Santa Cruz Hotel boondoggle and other things. And indeed, I have been trying to get together a flyer about Rotkin and Matthews' downside, if you will. And, of course, there is a new button out, which you may even have.
I might have, but I set it to the side. I was too busy jamming.
The terrible, too. You set your button aside, you'll be giving it back.
Too busy jamming, dude.
Well, you're good, so keep it up.
I want to comment about this. Insofar as the Safe Jam, it's interesting because after a certain point in time in the evening, it becomes the best show in town. For some folks who...
You're talking about the music on the streets Wednesday night from 6 to 10?
Yeah, of course.
You guys gotten good, man.
Well, after most folks cleared out last night, it was me and a good buddy named Jim. We're sitting there. No, we're standing there, actually. And we're still going at it, at least till 10:30. So a bunch of the regular crowd, I'd say, who are out on the streets, happen to join us. So they're all sitting up against newly, literally, you know, sitting up against the wall, crouching down, enjoying the show. So here comes this big, fat police cruiser. You know, nice SUV, one of the huge monsters, looking very slowly, cruising very slow. But I suppose they might have decided to get out and move some folks along, but because two musicians were there kind of legitimizing the thing... In my estimation, they moved along. That is, the police, that is. They didn't stop, but they went extremely slow because everybody was sitting up against New Leaf, just kicking back like a little amphitheater. So that was another spot where folks like to maybe congregate, at least on Wednesday evenings.
Indeed. It's a sort of a safe zone in more ways than one for homeless folks and for people who want to exercise their rights without having them removed by the police on behalf of, you know, some sort of abstract sense of power by the merchants in these downtown ordinances. We have about 6 minutes left in the show. Anything else you want to say?
Well, I was thinking more along general policy issues concerning services. When we talk about Medi-Cal, I'm not sure if you mentioned Medicare. It just seems to me that follows the general policy of being punitive in our civilization. You know, trying to... those with little have even little, and those with much get even much, so to speak. I think it's a paraphrase of some scripture
somewhere.
Yeah, the
system's sort of set up to make sure you can't get out of it.
Yes, but I notice a lot of folks must be benefiting from it. That is, not the clients who get the services themselves, but the whole bureaucracy of those who man the positions, the
Absolutely.
Position groups. They're getting a paycheck out of this, too, you know.
That's a very good point. There's thousands of employees and thousands of bureaucracies that are getting paychecks out of this.
Well, in a way, that's a welfare system, too. You know, in other words, that's their check.
Yeah, right.
It provides a mechanism whereby people can participate. So it just seems to me that until, you know, the populace really wants to change the basis on which the whole system is set up, we're always going to have to deal with these stingy, tough, kind of difficult situations that affect real people's lives, you know, real human beings. I guess if I'm a highly paid lobbyist in the you can make plenty of bucks there. There seems to be lots of dough for, you know, war making, corporate profiteering. There seems to be always plenty of that welfare available. But for those who are more on the meek, humble side, the marginalized side of things, it's made more difficult, kind of also as a fear factor, I'd say.
And locally, we have a situation, as I mentioned, I'm going to encourage people to check out this debate on the issue of desalinization and raise the issue of the culpability of city council in essentially handing over $3 million to a corporation, which, in fact, I'm going to try to read a little bit about that before the show closes, or maybe I'll take it up on Sunday when I come back at 9:30. Anything else, Condor?
I'm sure there is, but that's enough. Now you guys got a call in.
Hey, one call for 2 hours. I think that's not a record, but it certainly is a good idea. At least.
All right. Aloha.
You keep playing, Gregory.
Hey,
thank you.
Thank you. I'll be seeing you very soon, Gregory.
Indeed. Street spirit.
All right. Bye-bye. And indeed, Street Spirit, the homeless newspaper, will be available, the October issue, on probably tomorrow evening. And it's going to be distributed at the SAFE event on Wednesday. I guess, Tim, you'll be doing some distributing on Monday night in front
Absolutely.
Of New Leaf. And Thomas Levitt, who does a show on Sunday evening, Sunday morning at 7:30, also distributes from his office up on Soquel Avenue. And I
quickly plug the food program too.
Why don't you
possible.
Plug the food? You plug the food program.
Okay. I just want to mention that I do a food homeless food program in front of New Leaf on Monday at 6:30. We usually feed about 30 to 60 people, depending on what time of the month it is. I could use some help, some volunteers, some serious ones. Anyways, you can go again to humanityforhomeless.blogspot.com. Let me say that once more. humanityforhomeless.blogspot.com. And you can contact me through that. Or you can just come down 6:30 any Monday night. I'm there.
Do that. You can use the help. And Tim does all kinds of things, 7 and 8 and 9 and 10 projects at a time. This debate on community desalinization will be Tuesday night, 7 to 9, at the Quaker Meeting House at 225 Rooney Street. I'm not quite sure where that is. Talking more about that later on Sunday morning when my show comes back at 9:30. Also, I'll be trying to get a hold of Roger Mensch, who I believe goes to trial October 16th. His crime, selling marijuana to medical marijuana patients from the Felton Emporium. This is the second time he's been dragged before the prosecutors and the judges. And I haven't heard a word about this from the local activists, the Tim Rinkers, the Andrea Tischlers, the Anita Henrys. I've heard a little bit sort of by the by, but I haven't seen any protest on this issue. And I haven't heard Valerie Corral standing up and saying, wait a minute, people who sell medical marijuana have a right to do so with medical marijuana cards. Tim, you have something to say about this?
Well, I have some information, but it's too long to get into. We'll talk about it. Maybe I'll call in on Sunday.
That would be good.
Yeah.
Also, there's a rally on
Well, there was a rally on up in Berkeley, and I may get back on that. I'll have a report from Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center in Aptos on Jerry Henry and Richard Quigley and a recent victory about restoring the public space there, although there's another challenge coming up. The shopping center is trying to remove seating areas that were traditionally available for people to sit and socialize, drink coffee, be a part of the community, in the interest of driving off other groups of people, as similar as they do in Santa Cruz, the gentrification scene. So I will be back on Sunday. Please join me then. In between times, you can give me a call on the Huff line at 423-HUFF. And thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'm going to go out in a little pot music.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1, www.freakradio.org. Uncle Dennis in the hot seat as Robert exits Studio A for another week here. Of course, now you're into From the Cream to the Dregs, a weekly exploration of the music of the 60s and 70s. Since it's From the Cream to the Dregs, why don't we just start off with some Cream?